Aid Emergency Board rules of 2001-203 on January 29th, 2002. Notice was provided in writing to each member of the board proposed revision of rules. The board members have a copy of the reference. The chair would accept a motion on rules 2, 7, and 9 as presented.
So move.
Okay, Senator Butler, excuse me, Representative Butler moves that we accept the revisions on rules 2, 7, and 9. Is there any discussion? Seeing none.
Any objections?
If there's no objections, hearing none, we will accept the rules. Okay, and I don't have an agenda yet. Do you have anybody have an agenda?
Yep.
Yeah. First item then would be on grants. And I don't really have the list of people that are going to be doing this at this point.
Representative Morgan.
Representative Morgan, are you handling this one?
I am.
Would you please do so, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board approve in block item 1, the Oregon Judicial Department, item 5, the Oregon Employment Department, item 7, Oregon Housing and Community Services, item 9, the Department of Environmental Quality, item 11, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, item 12, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, item 16, the Oregon Department of Transportation, item 17, the Oregon Department of Transportation, and item 24, the Department of Human Services request for approval to apply for federal grants as described in the Legislative Fiscal Office analysis. The subcommittee had no questions or issues to discuss on these items and recommends approval.
Okay. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, is number 14 going to be included?
If I might, Mr. Please. President, the committee recommended that number 14 not be added to the list of grants that be approved.
And what is the reason?
If I might, Mr. President, the subcommittee discussion centered around the fact that the DLCD grant was a retroactive grant, and they made no attempt to notify the department the legislative fiscal folks ahead of time of the retroactive aspect. And the committee also had a lengthy discussion about whether the scope of the grant was indeed applicable to what DLCD was, what their function is.
Okay. Okay. Is there any objections to accepting these reports? Seeing none, we accept the reports, and we go to item 2, Representative Westland.
Thank you, Senator. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board approve the rebalance plan for Department of Corrections with instructions that $2,351,701 be flagged for reduction and used in the statewide budget rebalance plan, with the understanding that DAS will unschedule $1,284,289 until the compensation plan changes are finalized. The rebalance plan is based on the October 2001 prison population forecast and a department-wide review of all program area expenditures and newly projected needs. It relies on the use of management strategies and debt service savings to offset some of the unbudgeted expenses. I'm on the wrong topic?
Yes, sir.
Yep. I have number 2.
You also have receipt of reports.
Oh, I'm receipt of report?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's the best pony read I've ever done. Can't we just, you know.
This is on the
receipt of reports item. Me too.
This is retroactive approval of a rebalance.
This is a rebalance plan.
You didn't do this, though.
You didn't do...
This is a received report and block.
Got it.
I think I led you astray.
Whatever trail we go down, we will get to our destination.
All roads lead to Rome.
All roads lead to this in-block committee report. The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board acknowledge in-block reports. Item number 3, Department of Corrections. Item number 10, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Item 15, Division of State Lands. Item 21, Public Employees Retirement System. Department of Human Services. Items 22, 25, 26, 27, and 28. And defer to the April 2002 Emergency Board. Items 18, Department of Consumer and Business Services. Item 19, Department of Administrative Services. And the Department of Human Services. Line items 30 and 31. Agency reports as described in the legislative fiscal office's analysis. In acknowledging item 3, the subcommittee directed the Department of Corrections and the Department of Administrative Services to jointly provide a follow-up to the emergency board in April 2002 on the steps taken or steps planned to be taken to maximize the value derived from land sales from the benefit for the benefit of the state of Oregon and the department. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval of this task force.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any objections to accepting these reports? Seeing none, we will accept the reports, and I need to go back to item 2, which is approval of September 7th, 2001, November 16th, 2001 minutes. Have the minutes. Is there any additions or corrections to that? Seeing none, we will accept the minutes. And now, Representative Weston, you can start on number 2.
Well, for the sake of brevity, Mr. Chair, I'll just take up where I left off. item number 2. The Department of Corrections. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board approve the rebalance plan of instructions at $2,351,701 be flagged for reduction and use in the statewide budget rebalance plan, with the understanding that DAS will unschedule $1,284,289 until the compensation plan changes are finalized. The rebalance plan is based on the October 2001 prison population forecast and a department-wide review of all program area expenditures and newly projected needs. It relies on the use of management strategies and debt service savings to offset some of the unbudgeted expenses. It does not require any allocation of emergency funds. It requires an increase in other fund expenditure authority to allow interest earnings and construction project balances not required for project expenditures to be used to meet debt service obligations. In total, the rebalance plan identifies $37.8 million in general fund problems and proposes to resolve them with $16.4 million in construction cost savings and $21.4 million in reduced operating cost. Overall, the rebalance plan is very complete and is a plan that calls on all program managers to continue to provide all legislatively approved programs. I want to underscore that this plan calls on program managers to continue to provide all legislatively approved programs. The subcommittee unanimously recommends to the emergency board to approve the rebalance request.
Is there any objections to approving the request? Seeing none, then we will accept that.
Mr. Chair, if I could,
please.
I'd just like to compliment Dave Cook, Sue Acuff, Larry Nicewinder. This has been a long, arduous task, and this is the way it's supposed to work. I think it was noted in here, it's important to note that there was no use of emergency board funds. Thanks for helping us.
Yeah, thank you for the good job. We appreciate it very much. We'll go to item 4 and recognize Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the E-Board approve the request to increase the capital construction other funds expenditure limitation by $915,000 so the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training can continue to complete site-specific technical evaluations and schematic design activities preliminary to construction of a new public safety training facility with instructions. Since the last emergency board meeting, the department has worked with local officials in Sweet Home, Scappoose, and Salem to further refine infrastructure and other site-specific cost estimates. The department advises that each of the committees agreed with the methodologies used and the estimates developed. The department plans to utilize the increased expenditure authority to complete evaluations and schematic designs so it can present a request for construction authority to the emergency board at the April 2002 meeting. The subcommittee reviewed the request and discussed at length the remaining issues surrounding the facility siting decision. The subcommittee unanimously recommends approval of the request with instructions for the department to revisit the siting decision with the facilities steering committee and provide a follow-up report to the emergency board in April 2002 if any of the studies, technical evaluations, or negotiations with the city of Salem result in significant adverse changes to the costs associated with construction on the Salem site and or the timeline within which the facility can be constructed. The subcommittee unanimously recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator. Is there any discussion on this particular issue? Recognize Senator Yee.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the department's visit with Sweet Home community so we can understand the process better. We understand there are shortcomings in our site, in the size of the site, and in environmental issues. Although we wish we had known these issues earlier rather than so late when the community gets very frustrated and put in a lot of time and effort trying to qualify. And now looking at the comparison, Sweet Home is only about $250,000 less in cost in the siting. And I wish that the state would have some kind of economic development policy to say if the difference is only $200,000 or $300,000, the siting probably need to go to the rural community where they really need the economic development. I mean, the unemployment rate is about 8.2% in Sweet Home versus Salem is about 4.3%. So I think the return on investment is much larger when it's placed in rural committee. Having said that, I can support the continued examination of the site. I did ask some questions and appreciate the chair of the subcommittee to give me time to ask my questions. Basically, I would like to know what is the general fund loss in 05-07? It's predicted the general fund loss due to the construction would be about $11 million in 03-05, and I want to know what is it in 05-07? And the operation and debt service is going to increase from $16 million to $37 million for operation and debt service for this academy. So with the predicted general fund loss and the increase in expenditures, I want to know whether in their designing phase they can scale back the $74.3 million project, maybe to a more efficient and less expensive project so we can balance revenue with cost. And they indicated that they will come back with a response. And I also want to know what is the cost per student, because by the time you go to $37 million budget, and if they have 350 graduates, we are looking at a very high cost. So they indicated they will respond and let us know. Maybe there is a more efficient model somewhere out in other states we can look into. As long as we are in the designing stage, it would be very helpful to know what are some efficiency measures we can take to the site. So I'm going to vote yes with reservation.
Okay, thanks. Is there any more discussion?
Just one. Senator, in the ever diligent, conscientious manner in which state government continues to proceed ahead on this effort, the City of Salem, Senator, while they did not get your letter, they have provided us the table that indicates what the SDC charges are, and with your permission, I'd like to deliver that to you with a great deal of flourish, as opposed to craft this into a paper airplane and send it down. But you can see where they are marked.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. What defines significant? That there's a requirement in the recommendation that they would come back to the emergency board in April with any significant cost increases. What's the threshold?
I don't know what the word significant means in dollars. Yeah.
Chair and committee members, there was no specific discussion of that item in subcommittee. However, expectations that I would have would be that they would just share with you any changes at the April e-board of any nature. If they're significant, then it would cause them to go back to the facility steering committee and possibly revisit that. But I, if there is anything that would lead them to think that this isn't cost-effective to put it here, they need to do that.
Is that an adequate answer for you?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any other objections? Any objections to accepting the recommendations of the subcommittee? Seeing none, accept that. Let's go to item 13, which is Department of Forestry, and that would be Senator Mezger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $35,830,000 for protection from fire program activities and acknowledge receipt of a report from the Department of Forestry on the 2001 fire season. The department describes the 2001 fire season as a severe year, placing the 2001 fire season in the top three most severe seasons of the past 30 years. The majority of the extra fire costs this season have been incurred in fighting lightning-caused fires. The department currently estimates the need to increase the protection from fire programs, other funds expenditure limitation by $35.8 million. The major share of this increase is $30.6 million for the extra fire costs that occurred on state-protected land and adjacent federal forest lands and where joint fire control efforts were made. Costs incurred by the department under the Cooperative Fire Subprogram are fully reimbursed by the requesting federal or state agencies. The balance of the request is $5.3 million to provide a base budget for emergency fires in the 2002 fire season. The extra costs of the 2001 season, coupled with base budget expenditures occurring in fire protection districts for the fiscal year 2003, are likely to result in a subsequent request for additional general fund at the future emergency board meeting. The subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like I said, is there any discussion on the forestry department recommendations? Okay, seeing none, is there any objections to accepting the recommendations of the subcommittee? Seeing none, that we'll go to item 14, which is federal government representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a revisit of the DLCD grant request. Your subcommittee on general government recommends denying retroactive approval to submit a federal grant application to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration for $195,000 for the Coastal Atlas Project. Your subcommittee has three concerns regarding this grant application. First, the agency failed to notify the legislature of its intent to apply for this federal grant pending approval of the emergency board. Second, your subcommittee is concerned that a case has not been made that the data this grant will purchase will be useful to Oregonians. Finally, it is not clear that the proposed project is consistent with the mission of DLCD. The agency explained that it is the custodian of Oregon's ocean plan and the territorial sea plan, both required by federal agencies. Your subcommittee discussed whether this would have been a more appropriate grant and project for Oregon State University or some other marine state. Your subcommittee recommends denial of the request for retroactive approval of the grant application.
Is there any discussion on the denial? Any objections to accepting the report as done by the subcommittee? We may accept that, and we will go to number 20, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. President. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation on payments from the Oregon Opportunity Fund by $93,651,593. Increase the other funds expenditure limitation on payment of bond-related costs for the Oregon Health Sciences, Health and Science University Bond Administration Fund by $5,087,783, with the understanding that all payments of principal, interest, and premium will be paid from the bond proceeds during the 2001-2003 biennium. The 2001 Legislative Assembly did pass Senate Bill 832, which authorized state bonds to support the Oregon Health and Science University's Oregon Opportunity Program. This program includes the investments in facilities endowments, scholarships, and research infrastructure to expand OHSU's biotechnology research programs and its rural health initiatives. The university's goal is to hire approximately 300 new researchers, including 71 principal investigators, and to become one of the nation's top 20 institutions in terms of grant funding from the National Institute of Health. OHSU will seek to develop and participate in new breakthroughs in healthcare and biotechnology, and to capture the associated benefits of these breakthroughs for the state. It's a great benefit to the residents of the state of Oregon throughout the United States. The Department of Administrative Services is requesting the Emergency Board approve the expenditure of state bond proceeds for the Oregon Opportunity Program. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval. Our recommendation permits approximately $100 million of bonds to be issued this biennium, as requested by the university. The legislature in the next session could then decide whether to approve additional bonds up to an additional $100 million if voters approve the general obligation bonds for the program this November, or an additional $65 million if they do not do so in the, according to that measure. Oregon Health Science University will use $98 million of the state bond proceeds to construct a six-story biomedical research building on its main campus in Portland. The facility could contain a research laboratory, the offices for researchers and support staff. The full Oregon Opportunity Program will combine $200 million in state bonds with $300 million in private grants and $100 million in OHSU-issued bonds. The bonds would generate debt service costs in the next biennium, estimated to be $15.8 million in general obligation bonds if general obligation bonds are used, or $19.1 million if the more expensive revenue bonds are issued. If the 2003 Legislative Assembly chooses to issue the remaining bonds authorized under Senate Bill 832, the 2003-2005 estimated debt service for the entire package of the bonds would be $31.6 million. And it is the recommendation of the General Government Subcommittee that you approve this important initiative to proceed.
You sure spent a lot of money in a short time there, Representative. Is there any discussion on spending all this money that Mr. Booker...
With great pleasure.
Thank you, sir. I still enjoy being a state representative. I'm going to be voting for this package. I have some very severe reservations about OHSU, but I'd like to say that I honor my commitments, and the institution itself is worthwhile. So I will be voting yes on this, despite my very severe reservations about OHSU.
Okay, so any other discussion?
Senator President, I want to know, is a $75 million for hospital and university equipment purchases included in this approval?
Senator and members of the Emergency Board, the institution will be, the bonds that are being issued are not for that particular purpose. Bonds are to allow the institution to implement its Oregon Opportunity Program. However, the cash flow and technical, in order to get the financing for the Oregon Opportunity Program to work, the bond proceeds need to be spent entirely on capital projects. So what the institution will do is spend proceeds from the bonds on those equipment purchases, and will then use $75 million of other funds for certain non-capital costs related to the Oregon Opportunity Program, primarily the recruitment of new researchers. This was all anticipated in Senate Bill 832 during the legislative session.
So I understand the money is strictly for capital construction. So how can we spend it on unrelated equipment purchases and then have money used for recruitment, which is not capital construction? I mean, it doesn't comply with the intent of Senate Bill 820.
May I respond? The university is in the process of writing a grant agreement with the treasurer and with the Department of Administrative Services, as is required under Senate Bill 832, to allow this type of financing mechanism to work. It will be under that agreement that the university is committing to spend the full up to $200 million in, at this, the bonds would generate on investments specific to the Oregon Opportunity Program. The fact that some of these monies will be used to purchase equipment in the hospital is necessitated by the fact that these are bond proceeds and the direct funding is limited. But the bill, Senate Bill 832, allows these indirect types of support of the Oregon Opportunity Program, which is to say it does allow funds to be used that will then allows the additional proceeds to be allocated toward recruitment of new funds.
Is that answer your question?
Mr. President, I think we need a clarification when you work this project out with the Treasury Department, because the money is intended for capital construction, and I don't see how it can be spent for unrelated equipment purchases, and then, say, recruitment money can be used in its place. Recruitment is not capital construction. I can see the economic development value of capital construction, but not money on recruitment. I would consider that as operation. So I would appreciate a clarification from the Treasury Department before we proceed with it.
Questions for you? Steve, are these dollars so specified that they just say facilities only, or are they fungible?
Senator, Senate Bill 832 does anticipate the types of funding that are now being proposed in the sense that funds would be indirectly used to support recruitment. The university and the treasurer and DAS are in the process of drafting a grant agreement to allow these funds to be used in this manner. We did run by the proposed language of the grant agreement legislative council, and they did not see any legal problems with the way things were being done under that agreement as it had been drafted to.
So the legal technicalities have been worked out and approved.
Yes.
And Department of Administrative Services have given their okay to HSU in terms of the arranged time, or they will get together to further make it a little more compact.
They will. They have not. My understanding is that grant agreement has not been finalized yet, but they are working toward.
And as the person that overviews OHSU budget, do you feel comfortable with it?
Yes, the grant agreement process, yes.
Okay. And they're going out for doing things in terms of our technology is considered economic development in terms of our standards?
That could certainly have large economic development potential for the state, potentially. Under Senate Bill 832, they are authorized, this project has been authorized previously, and this is consistent, this request that comes forward to you today is consistent within that bill.
And one of our benchmarks, Mr. President, thank you, and one of our benchmarks in this state in terms of new development of this nature is to create job opportunity.
I believe that's so, though I haven't looked.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Steve, Senate Bill 832 allowed the $200 million to be spent in the manner that you're prescribing in the description here?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 832 authorizes state bonds. The request before you is to allow bond monies to be used for the project as it is being developed by OHSU. And the subcommittee did recommend approval of that, and that was the LFL recommendation.
So 832 didn't specify that it had to be used just for capital construction, is that what you...
Indeed, 832 anticipated the arrangements that are being used, that are being promoted here. So it did allow the funds to be used for non-capital projects in an indirect manner.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just so as to allay some of the concerns that have been expressed, there will be an additional match of private monies and other grants and gifts that will be available with the culmination, depending upon how the vote comes out in November, whether the full $200 million. But there will be additional $300 million in the pipeline coming here to take care of some of the other issues. So I don't think we're looking at, even though some of the funds may be used for part of the startup, that we may be looking at a shortfall in the overall capital construction and investment in capital projects of the $200 million. I think are there. Another item of testimony that was brought forward was that this is a $100 billion market in the United States today, the biotechnology. I think that the pointing our feet in the right direction, even though we're just making the first move on this, President Kohler feels like, and I feel to sustain him in this, and that is that we will pick up our proportionate share, which would be 1% of the population and 1% of that $100 billion industry into Oregon. I think then, as we then begin to take the baby steps into the overall process of the Oregon Opportunity Program, that we could actually land a greater percentage of the amounts of dollars that are available for bioscience in the United States today, and that could be an infusion into our economy of over $5 billion as we begin to make those baby steps, and then the strides that are before us, making OHSU one of the nation's premier research universities as we move towards the biomedical fields, is absolutely imperative for Oregon's health and well-being for the balance of the century, I believe. Thank you, Mr.
President. I recognize Senator Simmons.
Thank you. Yeah, just a couple words. While I am concerned about some of the conflict that is swirling around OHSU currently, and I hope it is quickly resolved, I am excited about the future potential that this opportunity presents for the state of Oregon, that in the field of biomedical research, and as so eloquently outlined by Representative Butler, potential for a huge economic engine for the state of Oregon in yet another segment of our society and our economy. And so I'm excited about the prospects that it brings forward.
Thank you, Representative. Recognize Representative
Westland. And, you know, the Senate thing will just, you know, I'm a House kind of guy. I want to underscore Senator Carter's words regarding economic development. I mean, this dovetails right in with what everyone is saying here. Representative Butler has alluded to the fact that this is either $200 or $168 million worth of bonding authority for the institution, depending on how the election comes out in, I believe it's May.
Okay, thank you.
And so, I mean, that $38 million worth of difference is obviously critical, but the important point here, when we made this decision, we were, of course, very conscious of the additional funds, grants and foundation money that OHSU has been so successful over the years in attracting. So, I mean, that's a significant leverage of state dollars to allow this institution to go forward with the Oregon Opportunity Program. But when we were making it, we had this decision, we had no idea how weak the economy was, and I think the job creation was not as important as some of the other considerations, even though it was important at the time. But I think Senator Carter has really underscored the economic development opportunities that this presents, not only for the Portland metro area, but statewide as well. I know Representative Minnis is working very diligently on an economic stimulus package to come out of this special session, and I see how this dovetails just very nicely, and I appreciate the work of Representative Minnis, and I really appreciate the comments by Senator Carter. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I guess I'd have to say that if anything, we're about 2 years behind. We should have started this some time ago, and I read about what's happening at the University of Washington and what's happening to the state and south of the state. We're probably a little bit behind in getting something like this started. Anyway, this is where we are. Is there any other discussion? Any objections to it?
I'm a no, because I feel that it's specifically for capital projects.
Okay.
I hate to see interest on bonds to pay for recruitment and operations.
Your objection is noted and be recorded that way. If there's no other objection...
I support economic development.
You do, okay. Well, we're pleased with that. Thank you very much. We accept the report then with one objection.
Yes.
And we'll go to item number 23, Department of Human Resources and Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval of a rebalance plan for the Department of Human Resources, which includes authorizing transfers of general fund, increasing other fund expenditure limitation by $23,219,749, and federal funds expenditures limitation by $150,689,902, approving the establishment of 29 positions and a reduction of 55.27 FTE, and requesting the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule a total of $3,369,063 other funds and $4,839,355 federal funds. DHS reported a net general fund need of $84.3 million, about 3.3% above its $2.5 billion general funded budget. Oregon Health Plan caseload growth, higher temporary assistance to needy families caseloads, and expected costs for the Federal Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, better known as HIPAA, are the major cost drivers. To address this need, DHS identified management actions totaling $60.9 million general fund. The subcommittee approved budget adjustments totaling $77.6 million general fund. These included other and federal funds revenues carried forward from 1999 to 2001 and program adjustments identified in the current group or gang of five proposals. The subcommittee also recommends deferral of the estimated $10.3 million HIPAA cost until the projects and costs can be better defined. Even with the actions recommended by the subcommittee, DHS remains $6.7 million general fund out of balance. The upcoming legislative special session is expected to consider several statutory changes that would provide enough budget savings to completely balance DHS current needs. An additional $22.8 million in special purposes appropriation established for DHS programs may be redirected for other uses. Your subcommittee recommends approval of the plan as adjusted. I would just have one comment to add. As the committee was convening this afternoon, some of you may have noticed that there was a small gathering here at the dais, and that was regarding a question about the institutional pharmacy reimbursement rates and AWP percentage reduction that was contained in the rebalance. You know, suffice it to say that the group of five and LFO and leadership and everyone's been running at a very fast pace, and things have been rolling quite rapidly. But any confusion that may have been caused will be addressed and clarified. I talked to my good colleague, Senator Westland. Representative Westland, and he assures me that the group will take a look at that to make sure that we clarify any confusion that would be there. But we recommend that you approve the plan as adjusted.
Thank you. Representative, is there a discussion?
Last question.
Pardon?
Question.
Thank
you. You also can come in Margaret, so send us.
I'm
in Maryland, too.
Minnie, let's not go there.
Representative Winters, thank you very much. I got the waiver, OHP waiver in my packet, but did not see it here. Did you guys not deal with that issue?
The waiver was not an item that was on the agenda today. We did not consider the OHP waiver application. Mr. President, was that an oversight or Mr.?
No, it was not an oversight. Senator, we've been working with the executive department trying to reach an agreement on the waiver. We've been making some progress. We still have not arrived at what would be considered an adequate program without huge roll-ups next session. And we have told the governor that we would not be addressing it during the e-board, but we would be addressing it probably a week after the special session and try to work it through.
Mr. President, I'm telling you what I'm concerned about, and this is not to imply that you are not concerned either, but I consider it a matter of expediency because now that caseloads are going up even more, and when I look at the numbers of people that are highly unemployed and displaced in employment, I consider it a little bit negligent on our part not to be moving with greater levels of expediency, since we do know that people need health care, need access to it. And I think that it is so important. And then when I look at what is happening in my county and in terms of the numbers of people that are going for services and not getting it and getting turned down, and then, Mr. President, I have to put on my other hat as president of the Urban League of Portland and trying to provide opportunity to low-income people. We're seeing more people coming in and asking, why can't we have services from the Oregon Health Plan? Why is food such a problem for us to have? And we're having to gear up more and more to our churches. And churches have called in and said, you guys are putting too much on churches here. We can't come up with all the money that it's going to take for food for low-income people, for health care services for low-income people. We're talking about a $4.3 million budget here. And things like a waiver is so imperative for those people who have no coverage whatsoever. So I consider it a little distasteful on the part of us as legislators. All of us legislators, we all have to take some responsibility for this, that we are not having that waiver, because it really, really ties into so many other things that are necessary. People sick, they can't go to work. And so I'm a little disturbed and perturbed today, needless to say, about this piece, Mr. Chairman, and also would like to read in the records a statement that I got from my county in terms of also the overall picture of rebalancing, and that is that local governments need to be granted the flexibility to respond to the state budget cuts. As DHS and other state agencies implement these cuts, they must work with counties to ensure adequate services to our shared constituents. I can't believe in that more than anything I know. That got to be hurting all 36 counties, not just Multnomah County. And so I would hope that expediency will take place in terms of us getting these issues resolved so that we can get on about the business of helping the most voiceless in this state and those people who cannot speak for themselves and don't have avenues to those of us who don't know what it is to not have health care or to not have food on the table or to not have other issues. I just think that we've got to move with greater expediency and much more passion than what we are moving on, and with some dispassion as well.
Thank you, Senator. I guess I would point out to you that the waiver is an application that goes back to Washington, D.C. It's going to take 3 or 4 months to get approved, and then they're talking about implementing it 1st of October. I don't think we've disturbed the timeline on that.
Right.
And people presently up to the 100% poverty level are still covered.
Right. But, Mr. Chairman, we're talking about extending that to about 185% of poverty level. What it does do, however, it keeps us from doing some of the planning strategies and putting them into place that would allow us to take the savings from those dollars and put it into the system so that the system can be expanded. That's what it does do. And if we could anticipate that in terms of the legislature moving on allowing the waiver to comes through or allow it to be dealt with, then we can do greater levels of planning. That's my concern.
Well said. I would tell you that the bill that we did pass, 2519, says that it will be expanded up to 185%, depending on the dollars we have to expand it. So we've already expanded it at $43,000 above projections, and I'm not sure there's going to be the dollars there just to suddenly go to 185%. But it does require to be revenue neutral, and we are working on that.
Senator Driftline. I'd like to make a few remarks regarding the waiver specifically. Senator Durfer and I have been working very diligently on this issue of late,
having spoken with Tom Scully, the federal director for Centers of Medicare and Medicaid, Dennis Smith, one of his associates there, who's the primary person responsible for waiver approval at CMS, Carolyn Oakley, who is the regional representative for the Department of Health and Human Services, and Randy Polson, who is the Seattle Regional Medicaid Office director. It's very critical as we proceed with requests for a new waiver that we get it right. And my primary goal, I know this is shared by Senator Durfler, is to ensure that the Oregon Health Plan is protected long-term and continues to be a viable mechanism for Oregon citizens, some of our poorest, to receive quality medical benefits. I have here before me from Hearst Crawford a letter indicating that our current waiver has been given a 3-year extension. So while this is ongoing, it's critical that we get this next one right. The current waiver did not allow the Oregon Health Plan to operate as Governor Kitzhaber had intended, even with fewer controls, less latitude for us to manage within the dollars that were provided and provide the best service to Oregonians. So I would encourage your support of and ask you to join in making sure that we get it right this time. And as Senator Durfler indicated, as we bring this to conclusion, hopefully sooner than later, we will have another e-board meeting and convene, even if we can do it by conference call, and get all your participation.
You know, Mr. Speaker, if you will forgive me, that sometimes that I use street words so that I can be very simplistic in what I want to say. So forgive me that. Now, I tell you what. There are a lot of things I do, and yeah, that I can be considered this is a very street word, and I apologize for it. But I tell you what, if I'm a pimp, I'm a pimp for the people and not for any other legislator or governor. And so I have to say to you, my concern has everything to do outside of the political realm. But have you had a Bob Castagna around your neck? Have you had any of these other lobbyists for social service around your neck? Have you had 50,000 things coming in about Medicaid services from OHSU around your neck? These are the people that I represent. And so I want you both to know, I'm not talking about the politics of this piece. I'm talking about what is good for the little people who are out there and have to go to bed sometime with the kind of pain that you and I can never imagine and the kind of fears that you and I cannot imagine, because we can call up our doctor on the telephone or get, what's his name, back there in the back with the medical association and say, call some of the guys and tell them that I need a little help. They don't have that avenue. So I want you to know, mine is not political. Mine is the little people that I have to look in their faces every day, and that's what I'm concerned about.
Mr. President, it would be a great disservice to the people of Oregon to have any politics involved in this, and I would reject that. If there's any indication there, I would reject
no
it out hand.
No pun intended.
Out hand, okay.
No pun intended in terms of you as individuals playing politics. I'm talking about the political system as an entity. But now, you know, if I meant that, I would have told you that too.
Mr. Chair, I just have to chime in because we've been working on this for some time. And we were very pleased when the new administration came in that would give us a door in order to make the approach to them to talk about this waiver. Because as Speaker Simmons said, we didn't get it right the first time, and it is an opportunity for us to get it right. I don't think anybody sitting up here would want to see anyone without medical help and medical services. But I also, those of us who have worked with the federal government over the years, it's been a long time since I've done this, but I did a lot of it in the past. It isn't the easiest thing in the world to get everything you need going through their bureaucracy either. And so we're wanting to make sure that it's right. And I want to reiterate, no one is against the expansion. No one is trying to stop the expansion. We were very pleased that we were able to get the extension of the current Oregon Health Plan. While we're doing that, we're also working to look at how we can bring a plan forward that is good and can do what we want to do. And at the same time, there's a provision in there that the feds want, and that's called cost neutrality. We've got to work those issues out in order to make sure we've got the plan. And I just wanted to lay that out there.
that, you know, it's going to take bipartisanship on all of our part to get not only the health plan waiver through, but everything that we're talking about today. You know, I said this morning when I talked to the subcommittee and to the audience, I was very pleased with the work that the bipartisanship that was done down with the group of five. And I hope that we can be just as committed on our full committee as that group of five has been in this process of trying to work us through a very horrible budget.
Okay.
Well,
are we...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, I'll echo Senator Carter, and also having spent a lot of time along with Representative Winters on all those meetings, we worked very hard on that. And I know, Mr. President, you are working still on that. And I know you're working to make that work, an employer to continue that work to get that waiver in. I'd like to get back, however, to the purpose of the item on the agenda. I'm going to be a no vote on this. I'm very concerned, as I know people in this room are, about some of these cuts in the DHS budget. I'm especially concerned because they go deeper for this body than I thought we would be doing today. I'm particularly concerned about, and there's many, but I'll only take a couple of moments, eliminating the Baby's First program. That's a huge cut in our public health arena. It helps high-risk babies, pregnant women. It also eliminates federal matching dollars once those are passed through to our local health departments. Eliminates all the other prenatal, perinatal programs. Those issues, along with numerous other ones that we have before us today, are particularly important for vulnerable populations. We meet in the emergency board in absence of the regular legislature. The regular legislature is going to meet in 7 days. Those issues, I believe, are too deep for us to decide with this body alone, and they should have, every member of this body should have an opportunity to weigh in on to the extent that we are doing today. So I object to this rebalance as it's presented today. I think it needs more discussion by the entire representatives of the state. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, Senator, I guess I would have to answer you to say that we did form a group of members to go down on the justice budget. They came to this agreement. I have a little problem trying to figure out why people object to this process. We always rebalance the agencies every 3 months. That's the responsibility of the board. That was the agreement made between the governor and the legislative group. And this is what they've designed to come up with. There will be opportunity to have a discussion in the special session, as you know. I don't quite follow why you feel that this is in not the proper direction.
Well, Senator, I appreciate that comment. Again, this is essentially in special session, we will be rebalancing everything. The fact that these things are regularly rebalanced in absence of those, the current crisis that we're in now in terms of how large our deficit is, I don't think, and I apologize for my cold, so that's why I sound a little different today, does not change the fact that these are critical programs that once they're eliminated by this body, the chances of having some of these reinstated realistically isn't going to happen. I think they are too critical at that level. I was prepared for a lesser level today. I wasn't prepared for this level today for 18 of us to make those decisions. And I think that rebalance should be part of the other rebalances from this level, especially this third level three for the entire body. I know a lot of my colleagues have great concerns about some of these issues, and I feel they're going to lose that opportunity to weigh in on that. Thank you, Senator.
Any other discussion?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Yee was next.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to be a no vote because there are too many cuts here that is going to cause us real problems. Instead of saving money, it's going to cause us real problems. For example, cutting the second year COLA for the developmentally disabled providers is not a prudent cut. They are already having 77% turnover rate. And if you keep losing the employees because you can't even give them COLA increase when they're already facing low wages, the developmentally disabled population we try to serve will lose service from the providers. And I've been saying all along during the session, they're scheduled to have their 25 cents increase per hour, wage increase. Instead of getting any wage increase, they are going to even lose their COLA increase. So I'm concerned the turnover rate is going to increase, and we are going to lose services for the DD population. And they are like what Senator Carter said, they are the voiceless citizens who can't speak for themselves. And I'm also concerned with cutting the pregnancy prevention money. If teen pregnancy increase, we're going to see more dropout rate, more increase in welfare caseload, and more juvenile crime in the near future. And I'm also concerned with cutting the pharmacists lower than their average wholesale rate. Local farmers said that if we have a more cost-effective formulary, include more generic generic drugs, and take off some very expensive drugs that are on formulary and very low inexpensive generic drugs are not on the list. So we need to have more cost-effective formularies instead of trying to make small savings from people who are making good services. There are many items I can afford. So I just want to express my concern, and we'll work with leadership to look for inefficiencies, to cut inefficiencies, duplications, bureaucracies, and make some savings to restore them. No increase in tax.
Just provide it, sir.
With that, in the form of a motion, I'll second it, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, colleagues, I guess I do have some consternation about some of the issues, particularly the last group of items that were set up for some reductions. And in our meetings early on in the budget prioritization process, I expressed grave concern, and amongst my colleagues, I expressed grave concern relative to any kinds of cuts that would carry with it federal monies, and particularly in fairly large amounts. And of course, we see some of that federal money cut when we come into the Department of Human Services, and this is the place where we're going to see the largest amounts of matching money for some very excellent programs, I might add. And I know that there have been some very difficult decisions that have had to be faced and tackled relative to some of those cuts. One of the problems is that some of the programs, including the perinatal program and the baby's first programs, those monies are then matched locally, and then the federal match with sometimes 1.5-2 times money on that to be able to provide us some of the benefits that we have locally. These two particular programs I just mentioned, because of the $628,000 cut, $628,000 translates into an additional $2.5 million of federal Medicaid matching funds, and that's what provides us 66 public health nurses, some of whom, some of my constituents, now we come back to Senator Carter's situation, some of my constituents, and as a youngster, the only Medicare that I knew, other than when they had to go to the clinic to get your appendix out or to take your tonsils out at recess with this piano wire, was the public health nurse. And so when we lose those public health nurses in rural Oregon, and we've got 66 of them that will be lost as a result of a $628,000 cut. And so I think it's more imperative than ever before that in this process, as we finish up this process, and it must be a very, very good budget, because most everybody is upset with it at this particular point, and it's got lots of us angry, and there's something in it for everybody to hate. So at that point, I would make certain that we make absolutely certain that whatever we do, that local governments be granted some degree of flexibility over the payments that we share with them as our partners in with the state. Local governments become our co-stakeholders and partners because they match many of these things, and then they go to the federal government and match others. And some of that becomes part of our maintenance of efforts in the Department of Human Services. But I do applaud the, those folks who have worked on the various budget levels, and I recognize that, you know, blood, sweat, and tears have gone into this. I'm not going to draw a line in the sand and say over this I'm not going to go at this particular point, but I certainly would appreciate some of these items being reexamined as we have any kind of opportunity for a look back or an add back list. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Representative. None of these are easy.
Mr. President, Chair, we did in your subcommittee, and there is a list that we had recommended that you do give high priority consideration if the revenues are such that you can go there, and we did name those, and we will get that list to you, which do include the COLA. It includes the TANF, the assistance payment, where we reduced it from $5 to $2.50. It also includes the food stamp outreach and Oregon Project Independence, some of those babies first. But we have a list for you that we ask that you and the speaker give it your leadership and include that in as you work with the revenues that come in.
Thank you, Representative. I think you probably, I hope we may have an opportunity to add to this. I think that there is a cushion left in case the economy doesn't go down further, that we, this group will have another opportunity to address those issues, I hope. Any other discussion? Excuse me, Representative Schrader and then Senator Byers.
I just wanted to comment to explain my no vote this morning in committee so members understand where I'm coming from. I think that it's important that this entire process move forward here today. And I support leadership entirely in making sure that this happens. It's part of our overall attempt to get a job, very tough job, done here on February 8th. My concern is about the institution, state legislature, and we talked about that a little bit this morning. I'd like to make sure that whatever happens, that our state legislature comes out of this looking like the individuals that I felt I saw this last session, a group of colleagues that work collaboratively together, regardless of party label. A lot of great things happened, in my opinion, this session. I enjoyed working with everybody. And while appearances on the vote may not lend itself to that, I look upon this as a bipartisan product. And I support that. I support that. And I want to make sure that our colleagues, the other thing I cautioned some people this morning about is we have a lot of new members on the House side. And a lot of my members are not quite up to speed. We have spent copious hours trying to get everyone up to speed. One of the things that's critical is that they feel like they've had some buy-in on this, that they've had the opportunity to search through, digest this, and feel like this is not something that's, that a few members in groups of 5, 15, or 18 have just come up with, and this is just the way it's got to be. So I think it's important we move forward here. I am supportive of that concept, and I think it's also important that our colleagues over this weekend, because we just got the product to them 2 days ago, had the opportunity to digest this whole thing and think creatively and collaboratively and feel like, yes, okay, this is something I'm going to have a part in, I'm going to have some buy-in. And the final analysis, we all probably own a little bit of this, a very difficult decision that comes down the line. So I appreciate your leadership.
Okay, any other discussion? Senator Byers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I've got a question on the FTE. Numbers of the positions. The number I think I heard was we're adding 30 positions, but we're eliminating 53 FTE. And I'm trying to figure out in my own mind if I heard that incorrectly or if that's in fact correct.
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, you have heard it correctly. The exact numbers are approving the establishment of 29 positions and a reduction of 55.27 FTE.
Mr. Chair, I guess I wasn't confused. I did hear it correctly, close anyway. And now I would like an explanation of why we are adding positions yet reducing FTE.
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, the positions are largely in the area of public health. Programs, about 34 positions, so that's the predominant addition of positions. and they are, by the way, not funded with general fund. The reduction in FTE is associated with a number of the reductions that were made on the general fund cut list that's in your binder. Many of those FTE did not have position reductions along with them for the reason that they have been actually had somebody in them for the first part of the biennium. So we don't administratively remove the position, we eliminate a portion of the FTE.
Okay, Mr. Chair, then I guess my next question would be, out of the net 25 FTE, or, you know, minus, if you look at, you know, one minus offsets the other, are there any people who actually were not have a job today and won't have a job when this is done?
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, I don't know the answer to that question about specific individuals who have a job today and would not in the future. I want to add something to my previous comment that Ms. Baker reminded me of, and that is that positions that were filled and that were subsequently the FTE was removed, that those positions would be eliminated at the end of the biennium. So, to answer your specific question, would those people find other employment within the department? They might. Some people might lose their jobs, but I don't know specifically, sir.
I guess, in other words, how many of these are currently vacant positions that are being, if FTE is being eliminated off them?
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, none of the ones that we're talking about here are vacant. There is an additional, and this is an estimate on the part of the Department of Human Services, roughly 86 FTE that's not counted in the number that we're talking about now, that is estimated to be within their administrative reductions, the department's administrative reductions.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I recognize this is a tough budget and a tough area, and I will support the proposal today. I do have reservations about parts of it, and as many of you know, I've looked into this a lot in the last couple of months, and I applaud the work the Group of Five has done, but I think there are other things that could be done to, you know, offset them, or different ways they could be done to get to the same budget numbers. I'll support you going forward, but I think I don't think the work is done here.
Thank you, Senator. I agree with. I think if each one of us were to sit down and do the budget, we'd do it differently. But I would also applaud the Group of Five who is doing this. Obviously, some of the choices were done because of personalities, without question, and that's why each one of us would do it differently. I think that we started out, and hopefully we can continue on a bipartisan basis so that we can get through this process. Frankly, I don't like what we're doing either, but you have choices. You have to stand up and be counted sooner or later, and hopefully that we can keep it on a bipartisan basis so that each one of us has an opportunity to express ourselves.
Thanks, Senator. I just want to make a general comment. You see the committee having some difficulty with this decision, and let's just be blunt and let's just be honest. This is the first difficult decision that we are making in the process of dealing with an $853.4 million revenue shortfall that this state faces. And this is not easy, this is not fun, and it's a decision that has to be made. Now, Senator Durfler refers to some wiggle room in there. That is much too strong and active a verb. Tweak is too strong. Modify is too strong. We have some ability to do nuances or finite finessing. people talk about additional input coming into this, and I've already been in contact just this morning with advocates representing the perinatal and Babies First program. And I appreciated the way they approached me because they not only came with an identified concern, they came with an identified solution within this rebalance that affected them. They targeted a priority to them and said, look, this is more important to us than this other area. And for us to get through this, that's what it's going to take, not only from the members of this committee, but all of the citizens, stakeholders, and lobbyists in the audience. Folks, we're in trouble. And if there's too much pressure, too much grousing, and too much politics put in this, we will fail. And the result of failure is that $830 million is coming out of the budget. And that this rebalance looks like a walk in the park with people throwing rose petals at your feet. As difficult and painful as this is, and the constituents and those without voices that Margaret Carter so eloquently discussed will be much worse off, as will every other constituency group and citizen in this state if we fail. We're all in this together, and we have got to get through this. We have got to succeed, and we need all of your help. And I would strongly encourage, and I mean this with all sincerity, that each of you and all of the people concerned in this process, you say, get down on your knees every night and say little prayers for your legislators, because we've got a tough job ahead of us. The price of failure is $830 million reduction in the legislatively approved budget. We can do this. We need your help. Please. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any other discussion? Okay. We have a voice vote, please.
Representative Weston?
Aye.
Representative Schrader?
No.
Representative Butler?
Aye.
Representative Winters?
Aye.
Representative Minnis?
Aye.
Representative Morgan?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Speaker Simmons?
Aye.
Senator Yee?
No.
Senator Clarno?
Aye.
Senator Carter?
No.
Senator Messerly?
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
No.
Senator Beyer?
Aye.
President Durfler?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay. I think that completes the agenda today. And we